Les colloques du Collège de France.
Donc, j'ai le plaisir d'introduire Edward Campbell, qui est professeur émérite à l'Université d'Aberdeen, King's College, et qui nous fait le plaisir de venir nous parler de la notion de matériau musical dans les cours du Collège. Edward Campbell est un spécialiste non seulement de Boulez, mais aussi de la pensée française de l'époque de Boulez, et donc des résonances philosophiques au fond du discours et de l'intellectualité de Boulez. Merci, Eddy.
Merci. Premièrement, je voudrais remercier pardonnez-moi, j'ai oublié le programme, mais je remercie ceux qui ont m'inviter ici au Collège de France, c'est un grand honneur pour moi. Merci beaucoup. Je parle en anglais avec un très accent écossais. Boulez avait une très grande relation avec l'Écosse. Il a visité l'Écosse en 1980 avec Jean-Louis Barrault et pour la dernière fois, 2004. C'est une très grande relation et j'ai rencontré Boulez là. Merci. In this talk, I explore some of what Boulez tells us about musical material in his Collège de France lectures. In the course of the lectures, he returns regularly to a constellation of key concepts pertaining to musical composition, which he relates in constantly inventive ways. The slide shows some of the most important components of this constellation, including invention, the musical idea, material, systems, gesture, craft, dialectic, codes, thematicism, athematicism, the virtual theme, memory, writing, and form. Rather than give a simple starting definition of what Boulez means by musical material, my hope is that this will become progressively clearer as my talk progresses. Already in Invention, Invention, Technique et Langage from 1976, the teaching statement which he submitted in accepting the invitation to the chair at the college, Boulez highlights the dissatisfaction felt by musicians in the face of inadequate sound material. He identifies musical material as central to musical invention, stating that, quote, invention and material are inextricably linked, unquote, that they exist in a reciprocal relationship and stand in need of being rethought. One of the key points separating Boulez and his composer colleagues from the experimental tradition pertains to their different evaluations of sound. Unlike John Cage and other experimentalists for whom sound is of intrinsic value, and no distinction is to be made between sound, noise, and music, Boulez, following in the tradition of Schoenberg and others, posits that while sound exists within itself and on its own terms, it nevertheless has to be integrated, quote, into a project to become a usable element within a musical language, unquote. He returns to this point several times in the lectures. From the standpoint of the mid-1970s, Boulez surveyed the situation of contemporary music, finding that the hierarchical organization, which was so important to music's past, was being undermined by, quote, increasingly anarchic interventions and choices, unquote. Recognizing that the elements of the musical languages employed by contemporary composers were now more individual and heterogeneous in nature than before, he opted for the most part not to explore novel instrumental playing techniques, a practice he describes as eccentric. Beyond the domain of acoustic instruments, he judges that while the electroacoustic domain was still too rich and unexplored to be organized hierarchically, its chaotic disposition nevertheless provided a path to liberation for some composers. In Invention Recherche from 1976, his inaugural address to the college, while recognising that notions of musical material have evolved over time, he judges that with the technological research undertaken from the mid-1940s onwards, musical material has, quote, taken on a life of its own, almost independently of musical invention, unquote. He speaks of a gulf between musical ideas and sound material, and what sound material can hope to achieve. This is problematic for him, since he believes that whenever either musical material or the musical idea are developed independently of one another, without considering how they might relate to one another, the approach is seriously unbalanced and has a detrimental effect on the composition. Boulez draws a parallel between music and architecture, where with the latter, structural constraints have been radically altered with the introduction of new materials such as concrete, glass, and steel. He notes that while not its original purpose, technological research into sound became focused analogously on the search for new sound material. He affirms, however, that without sufficient aesthetic reflection, the sound material which results from this kind of research tends to proliferate independently on its own in an uncontrolled way, thus offering immense potential without directing us towards specific methods. The crucial questions for Boulez are consequently whether or not the material is sufficient for elaborating the musical thought, whether the musical thought is compatible with the material, and whether the material is capable of meeting the composer's immediate needs. He suggests that if invention is unconcerned with, quote, the essential functions of the musical material, unquote, and settles instead for the fortuitous and coincidental, it can no longer develop organically and will fail to explore the material's genuine potential. Given the absence of generally accepted codes in contemporary music, Boulez posits in Idée réalisation métier from 1977-78 the importance of deduction in exploring the musical idea, a conception which he takes from Schoenberg, for whom, quote, the vision of the work emerges from the initial gesture, unquote. For Boulez, the composer is guided by craft in working with the musical material, where the composition emerges by means of a dialectic between the known and the unknown, and it is necessary to transgress existing codes. With both composition for acoustic instruments as well as electroacoustic composition, the composer's creative engagement needs to be well matched to the material. The composer must determine how, quote, a coherent, rich sound world capable of supporting structures, unquote, and of controlling composition can be organized from sonic chaos, understood as the totality of available possibilities. At the same time, he recognizes that the composer's craft will enable the work to go beyond the originally identified material so that each composer can produce their own compositional consistency and coherence. The topic of musical material is central to the lecture course Langage, Matériaux et Structures from 1978-79, where Boulez posits a necessary relationship between musical language and material such that sonic material cannot be considered musical, quote, outside of the codes of an individual musical language, unquote. He expands upon his earlier critique of electronic sound, rejecting the notion that sonic material is in itself musical. He opposes the view that the entire universe of sounds, whether emanating from everyday life, from nature, or arising from cultural phenomena or technological sources, can be considered as music. He rejects this decisively on the basis that it amounts to, quote, a complete negation of musical language as a coherent and organic whole, unquote. He suggests furthermore that the criteria for defining musical language prohibit, quote, the integration of raw or sophisticated material and exclude such a casual use of material in musical composition. In cases where any sonic object whatsoever is accepted, he judges that the relationship between event and structure is deliberately cut, since the material has not been selected for its potential for formal integration, and the constraints necessary for musical development are ignored. This approach, he believes, defines musical material arbitrarily and fails to recognise both its proper working and the necessary reciprocal functions linking material and structure. With regard to musical material, the first question for Boulez is this material musical? Or is this material musical with respect to my conception? He envisages two options, a first in which pre-compositional material is constructed specifically for use within a given system, and second, in which already existing material, found material, is adjusted to make it adapt to the system, and where unwanted characteristics, including extraneous connotations, are removed. Varese's use of sirens as a means of smoothing the sound continuum is rejected by Boulez on the grounds that the sounds produced by sirens are too crude to be integrated meaningfully into a properly worked out syntax, and that they unavoidably connote the sounds of alarms and police cars. We think of New York cop shows, for example. Beyond the fundamental question, what is musical and what is not, he identifies an even more fundamental conundrum, namely, quote, how can we decide on a criterion that would in itself distinguish one from the other, unquote, suggesting that the difference derives, quote, from the relationship in a work between raw material and organising structure, and from the internal coherence of the content. For Boulez, musical material is by necessity musical in origin. It arises from sound and not from a poetic idea or any kind of diagram drawn from an extraneous domain. Perhaps there's a little barb against Xenakis in that. The composition emerges from the working out of the material and not from the imposition of a pre-existing plan which might inhibit the ongoing interaction of idea and material. While an inventory of material or a conceptual plan can help the composer keep track of the work as it develops, any such plan must be open to chance and to the possibility of an accident which might in fact undermine it. He likewise posits a dialectic of structure and material in which the structure, quote, attracts material, unquote, while allowing anomalies and irrational moments where the power of the material succeeds in making us, quote, temporarily forget the structure, unquote. He recognises the problem whereby tradition has familiarised us so thoroughly with certain kinds of musical material that new material is rejected on the grounds that it does not operate in the same way as the old, perhaps sounding grammatically wrong to us, in poor taste, or even as incongruous. He gives the old martinet, saxophone and vibraphone as examples of instruments whose sound worlds have walked that line of acceptability, non-acceptability in relation to traditional practice. With specifically percussion instruments in mind, he considers how over time raw instrumental material becomes increasingly accepted, enters usage, and eventually no longer strikes us as exceptional. With the passage of time, the sound of the xylophone, for example, were absorbed, even neutralized, and no longer seemed incongruous as the material passed from being considered non-musical or even paramusical to being accepted as fully musical. He notes, however, that this is not always the case, and that many works from the late 1940s and early 1950s onwards still struck listeners as unmusical in the late 1970s, as they did 30 years previously. In the lecture course Automatism et Decision from 1980 to 1981, Boulez highlights the importance of notation in determining how musical material is used, since notation, quote, represents the material, unquote, reveals its nature, while also reflecting and expressing whatever changes the composer makes to the material. He posits that at the level of material, indeterminacy was introduced into Western art music tradition, principally through the treatment of percussion and of voice. Varese's use of percussion in Ionization, Schoenberg's treatment of the voice in the Ode to Napoleon and Piero Lunaire, as well as Berio's vocal writing in Circles and elsewhere, are cited as examples. Given Boulez's use of steel pans in Sourancies, it is notable that he refers to steel pans as having adopted traditional Western scales, and he characterizes them paradoxically as both conquering and having been conquered by classical music, to the point where their employment is arguably deformed or distorted in relation to their original use. While he now suggests that, quote, anything in the familiar utilitarian universe that is capable of providing us with sonic signals can potentially be incorporated into music, unquote, he is, as always, wary of the numerous connotations that these might suddenly evoke in us. He's equally suspicious of the use of found objects as sources of material, whether they are used as fragments with their own logic or as sources out of which the composer attempts to create a structure or system. He equally rejects the parodying of musical material by means of taking a historic genre or form, such as a chorale, whereby it is distorted in whole or in part, since irrespective of intention, quote, the reference is always apparent, unquote. From 1982, Boulez devoted 3 years of lectures to a sustained consideration of thematicism and athematicism, rereading his own compositional trajectory and focusing, among other things, on the question of musical material and how he adopted what he inherited from his predecessors. In La notion de thème et son évolution from 1982 to 1983, he acknowledges what he derived from Webern in the composition of his own sonatina for flute and piano from 1946, noting, quote, once the functions of the initial material were defined, there was no need to resort to the use of themes in the strict sense. Over the course of a work, one could pass from one thematic development to another by means of athematic transitions, unquote. In Thème, Variation et Forme from 1983 to 1984, he notes that the basic material for Structure for Two Pianos, which he composed in 1951-52, which he acknowledges taking literally from Messiaen's Mode de Valeur et d'Intensité, was not the material as it appears in the completed piece, but rather Messiaen's raw pre-compositional material. Having borrowed the material, Boulez notes that he altered it fundamentally, making each of the parameters independent of one another to produce something very different from Messiaen's piece. In the lecture series Automatism, Identité et Variation from 1984 to 1985, Boulez sets out a more detailed retrospective account of his own developing approach to musical material. The starting point for this self-critique is Schoenberg's championing of musical unity, whereby all the material within a composition must be deduced from a single series. For Boulez, this conception in which pre-compositional material is only prepared with regard to pitch neglects the other dimensions or parameters, is too absolute, and inhibits the material's capacity for development. He judges that the other parameters need to be addressed, quote, to transform it into musical material, properly speaking, unquote. Consequently, he attributes his own idiosyncratic approach to musical material as a solution to the problems arising out of Schoenberg's work. While the post-war generation of composers applied serial thinking to the dimensions of pitch, duration, timbre, and attack, all of which were organized, for example, in Boulez's first book of Struktur in 12s, he judges retrospectively in the lectures that this kind of organization did not correspond to the nature of rhythm, that pitch and rhythm are independent in their working, and that their dynamics and timbre can no longer be theorized as equal dimensions or parameters which can be subjected to divisions into 12 gradations. Dynamics and timbre are now considered secondary dimensions which are applied to already worked out material and which shape the changing envelopes in the course of a composition. For Boulez, the preparation of musical material is a pre-compositional activity, since in composition, the elements the composer selects arbitrarily as raw material need to be managed to establish, quote, a rational network of relationships, unquote. He posits that after the initial arbitrary choice is made, for example, of a series, the consequences of this choice can then unfold without any further arbitrary involvement according to its own internal logic. From this perspective, musical form becomes the guided working out of the initial material. Looking back to his first book of Struktur in the lectures, he judges that the elementary objects were, quote, too undifferentiated, and that, quote, the play of the elementary material was completely insufficient to create a musical object. He judges that the piece ultimately fell short, since the coherence which exists in the score is not reflected in the experience of listening. At this point, he revised his approach to the series, developing pitch multiplication processes, whereby starting out from a basic 12-tone series, the series itself becomes a generative source of material rather than the basic material itself. In contrast with the approach taken in Struktur 1A, raw material and compositional material are no longer the same, since the material in the score of Le Marteau sans Maître, the first extant work to use this new methodology, has been extracted from raw material through composer choice from among the great deal of musical material he created. As several scholars have shown, having made this discovery, Boulez continued to use it throughout his career, refining it along the way. In Le Système Ilide from 1985-1986, Boulez states that the composer must ensure that a composition does not merely enumerate all of the possibilities thrown up by the raw material. He considers, first of all, preparatory operations which relate to the identification of the raw material, and following that, the production of shaped material with which the composition is formed. Referring to these as formation systems and application systems, he suggests that these different musical systems form a hierarchy relating progressively to raw material, shaped material, and the organization of this material into a meaningful form. These layers of activities are inseparable and interact continually, so that the system relates to the idea which transforms the system, which recreates the idea, and so on endlessly in the spiral of the musical process. Discussing Éclat from 1965 in the lecture series Entre Ordre et Chaos, Boulez acknowledges, in distinction to his thinking in the 1950s, that pitch is different from the other dimensions in that it is, quote, susceptible to some absolute quality regardless of context, unquote. He posits a hierarchy of perception extending from the absoluteness of pitch to the relative nature of dynamics. He distances himself once again from what he refers to as, quote, a kind of nihilistic or egalitarian tendency, which says that any noise, any sound can be included deliberately or not within a composition. For Boulez, this amounts to, quote, a refusal to distinguish between truly musical material and musical and material which is not musical, between organic and found material, unquote. And John Cage is now named explicitly in this regard. In Le Concept d'Écriture from 1990 to 91, he recognises that the pre-compositional work of preparing raw material is idiosyncratic and unique to each composer. The centrality of his own technique of creating blocs sonores is evident when he discusses the production of vertical pre-material, which enables the composer, quote, to perceive the sound events in relation to one another, unquote, and to facilitate the work's coherence in both local and global terms. While he once again looks to Webern, he also now identifies Berio, Ligeti, and Carter as models, highlighting Carter's pre-material, which exploits specific intervallic qualities, the registral placement and relationships, as well as the density of his sound objects. He turns again to Carter in L'Écriture et l'Idée, where he notes that the American composer's materials range from a single focused interval to an interval collection of limited size, whose varied combinations can provide a considerable number of similar objects. For Boulez, Carter's methodology is paradigmatic in presenting a system which always remains open. His constraints are both strong and loose, so that every idea and every development of an idea is subject, for example, with rhythm, to a given tempo, but the numerical relations, ratios for durations, which is to say the rhythmic structure, are completely free. While recognizing that there are innumerable ways of creating musical material, Boulez stops short of requiring that every composer should be responsible for creating their own approach. At the same time, he holds that, quote, the musical idea needs source material that embodies it, but does not restrict it, and that the musical material should not just be equivalent to the exploitation of the initial source material, unquote. Equally problematic is the situation where the composer creates source material with specific properties which fail to appear in the realization of the musical ideas themselves. For Boulez, the answer is to ensure that the initial material is flexible and open, and that it does not predetermine everything, while ensuring that it is strong enough to prevent the composition from becoming incoherent. Indeed, English composer Edwin Roxburgh praises this lecture course by Boulez as arguably the best possible lesson for student composers. So to conclude, in his Collège de France lectures, Boulez sets out the overarching principles behind his own evolving approach to composition. While some elements of his reflections are of idiosyncratic importance to him alone, other aspects arguably have wider applications, although on the level of principle rather than that of detailed practice. The lectures may invite composers to find alternative means of producing coherent musical material, and caution against the naive presumption that off-the-peg solutions are desirable. He distinguishes between the creation of pre-compositional material and musical material, properly speaking, and commends approaches to composition which embody a dialectic between system and idea, in which sound only becomes musical when it is contextualized within a syntax, a hierarchical scheme, or system of possibilities. Arguably, there is nothing deterministic about the kinds of material a composer can employ within such a system, or the sound of the music that will result from the dialectic of material and idea, or material and structure. Composers can find themselves at various points on a spectrum of possibilities. While Boulez discounts a wide range of sounds for use as pre-compositional material or as musical material, and he himself worked with tempered pitches mostly rather than abstract frequencies or other more complex sound events, there is nothing in his general approach with its focus on codes, deduction, system and idea, which precludes the application of his general principles to vastly different sound materials, including electronically produced sounds or noises, incorporating extended performing techniques, or employing idiosyncratic new notational practices. In answer to the question posed by Boulez's erstwhile student Alexander Gurr in 1960, is there only one way? The answer is clearly no, and the contemporary composer is faced with a diverse range of approaches to musical material, of which Boulez's is only one. Boulez was not interested in cultivating imitators, épigons, as he would have called them in his earlier years. Philippe Manoury, for one, rejects the idea that Boulez's books can be used immediately as tools without a composer producing sub-Boulezian music. Alain Gossin posits the importance of teaching students that composition involves not only ideas, but also their articulation as in a structure, as well as the importance of syntactical consistency. Like Boulez, George Benjamin states that he does not define a form before starting work on a composition, and that he prefers to let the material, quote, construct its own destiny as the work progresses. Portuguese composer Emmanuel Nunes noted that of the post-war generation of composers, only Boulez offered a general theorization of the problems of écriture. And Nunes's student, Pedro Amaral, acknowledges the influence of Boulez's concept of vertical harmony as a means of providing coherence to the horizontal and vertical dimensions. English composer Julian Anderson recalls having attended Boulez's College de France lectures and was fascinated by the different ways Boulez reused his material from one work to another. Younger composer Dai Fujikura, in contrast, when commissioned recently to compose a piece for performance alongside Repon, reflected that he would, quote, do everything opposite to what Mr. Boulez has done before and would do today, unquote. Then again, what else should we hope for? When Julian Anderson asked Boulez in a BBC interview in 1999, where is music going? Boulez replied, quote, where the next person takes it, unquote. And I would add that this may be just as true of musical material. Thank you.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.